Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Dominator. 10:10 on a Saturday morning. John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me.
It's on your Christmas list.
Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Hopefully it's not all things material, it's just the spirit of the season, and we wish you that from WGN Radio this morning. We're here until 12 noon. Remember, I do a show from 1 to 3, Monday through Friday on WGN. I'm also the host of the Mincing Rascals podcast. Get that wherever you listen to finer podcasts. We'll play back part of that right after the 11 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. Don Mattee, Sam, as you and Don both know, was the co-host of our Christmas Spectacular yesterday. Lou started his show today talking a little bit about that. None of us has any good idea if it was any good radio or not, but it sure was fun to do. And I suspect it resonated with you, kind of rung the right bell and sounded pretty good. But yeah, we're all just so involved in the putting on our little five-minute parts of this giant broadcast that we didn't really get a sense of it as individuals. Don Mattee was there the whole time, and the bit was that Don Mattee doesn't sufficiently have the Christmas spirit that Bill Laff and the rest of the staff are going to lead him through a two-hour special in order to sort of bring it to him. You don't really hate Christmas, though, do you, Don Mattee?
I don't really hate Christmas.
That was just shtick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, for my part of the bit, I said, okay, I'll ask the staff to tell me anonymously, or for you guys anonymously, some Christmas vignette from their life, some memorable moment, and then I'd read it to you guys and quiz you. Who was it? Before I realized that you were going to be the co-host, I even asked Don Mattee to do it. I didn't ask you this on the air because I figured you would know. This was Don Mattee's Christmas memory. Do you mind if I read it, Don Mattee?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
It's short. You just said, back in the day, my two sisters, close cousins, and I would spend Christmas Eve hiding the gifts we bought or made each other around the house. The only way to receive your gift was to find it. And we didn't end the game until New Year's. So if you failed at hide-and-go Christmas, you'd have to wait until the ball dropped to get your gifts. I had to call my sister to remind me of this. Lost track of this little ritual over the years. I think we'll bring it back. I've never heard of that, but that sounds like fun. Kind of gives you something to do between Christmas and New Year's, and if nothing else, you've got something to look forward to after the big Christmas letdown on New Year's Eve. So that's pretty nice.
I was so happy you asked about, like, I think that was such a good game idea. Because I asked myself, I said, okay, John Williams asked, what Christmas tradition do we have? I was like, we don't have any. She was like, you don't remember? And our gifts were so bad that the only way to make Christmas fun for each other was to do something like this to make it feel special.
That's kind of nice. I like
really
the sound
nice.
Of that. Some people limit, like, do you open Christmas presents on Christmas Eve? Do you do one? Do you do all of them? Do you do none of them? We were always no pre-opening. It was all Santa Claus on Christmas morning. In fact, this is my great Christmas memory. I wrote this just like you did. I said, when I was in the fourth grade, I had one of those, well, that's all the presents, kids. Oh, no, wait, look what Santa's left one gift behind the sofa moment. Hey, Johnny, go see what it is. And there it was. An Aurora HO scale slot car set. A race car set. It's what I always wanted. And I completely lost it when I saw it there. I was cheering and screaming. Only one lane worked on the track that had been set up for us, so we couldn't really race the cars. My brother and I had to take turns driving one of them in its lane around the track. To this day, I love race car sets. I bought one for my nephews a few years ago, and I was the only one that played with it. I couldn't get anybody to go in the basement and there on the ping pong table race cars around the track with me. My sons wouldn't do it. My nephews wouldn't do it. So I'm sitting there with a controller in each hand racing myself. Here comes the brown car. Here comes the white car. It's not as much fun when you do it that way. But listen, I'm over it. Don't you worry about me. I'll be fine. Lou Manfredini's contribution was, we'd hosted Christmas Eve at our home for years. Before everyone comes, I turn on It's a Wonderful Life on the DVD player in the family room, and it repeats all evening long. Family members come and go, or sit and stand and watch a few minutes, and then everyone leaves around 10 o'clock or so, and we clean up the house a bit. We sit as a family and start the whole movie all over again, and we watch it together. I still cry at the same spots in that movie every year. I'm just like you, Lou. Well done. Nick wrote this, our Nick DiGilio, you hear him late nights on WGN Radio. He said, the absolute best Christmas gifts I ever received were the newfangled technology of the future, VHS copies of John Carpenter's Halloween, and the classic horror masterpiece Phantasm. I watched them over and over and over so much I wore out the tapes. Doesn't that sound like Nick? This was from Steve Bertrand, who does news, of course, and is one of our Mincing Rascals partners, and he does the noontime business lunch here on WGN as well. And Steve wrote, one of my most memorable Christmases had nothing to do with Christmas at all. I was scheduled to visit the Soviet Union on the 26th of December and realized on Christmas Eve that I did not have my passport. We searched everywhere. And as a last resort, I decided to drive back to my university on Christmas morning to see if I'd left the passport in my room. What's worse, I'd also lost my key. So we had to stop at my roommate's house in Chicago along the way. Steve drove there with his dad, and he wrote, the tension was huge. They did not speak a word for the three-hour ride, wondering if they were going to find the passport. We got to my house, went to my room, and there it was. My dad and I had an early Christmas toast. I think it was Pabst Blue Ribbon. I asked Steve about that. I said, Steve, I told that to Lou and Mary Beth the other night at the It's a Wonderful Life pop-up bar in Berwyn that we were eventually able to get into. And as I was telling them the story with my own embellishments, I actually started to cry. I said, I just love that story, the tension and then the great release and the I love you moment. And he says, you don't even know the half of it. He said, because really, we're like, okay, Dad, my dad was kind of ticked. Oh, geez, son, what did you do? You don't know where your passport is? These kids, I'll tell you, honey, he's leaving for the Soviet Union on the 26th, and he doesn't know where his passport is? It's Christmas morning. He said he was literally on the phone with somebody in Washington, D.C., trying to see how on Christmas Day he could get an emergency passport. Otherwise, he was going to miss this big college trip to Russia. So he and his dad drive up there silently. You know, he says, oh, by the way, Dad, we got to go through Chicago and get the key and then up to Milwaukee where Steve was going to school. What a Christmas. What a Merry Christmas. But he said, I promise you this. When we get to my room, if it is there, and I'm sure it is, I know exactly where it is. I know exactly where it will be. So we'll just go right in and find it. They walked into the room and Steve started to look everywhere but there. He was turning up the mattress and looking under clothes and piles, and he was going everywhere. And his dad said, what are you doing? I thought you knew where the passport would be. He said, I do. And if it's not there, I'm screwed. So I'm giving myself every other hope first. I was like, oh, this poor kid, I hope it's there. I know how the story ends. He opens the drawer. There it is. Hark the herald angels sing. And then they have a Pabst Blue Ribbon. And the merriest Christmas of all. Justin Kaufman, who you hear on the download weeknights on WGN Radio, wrote, our family traditions include writing each other notes about why each member of the family is important to the other. That might be some tough writing, some creative writing for some families. But Justin wrote, we write our note and put it in our stockings. The other stocking tradition, socks and underwear and saline solution. Nothing says Christmas like a nice new vial of shiny saline solution for whatever. What do you do with saline? Is that for your eyes? Is that what you do? What do you do with saline solution? Is that eye drops?
I think so.
Here's Violetta Podramedic, who you hear doing traffic on WGN Radio, both on Rokan's show with Anna DeVlantis. They've also expanded her hours. You hear her with Steve at noontime and me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. And she wrote, Christmas was more religious in my house. We are Christian Orthodox and still use the old calendar in our church. So we always had two Christmases growing up. American Christmas on the 25th. That was for decorating and presents. And Serbian Christmas was for fasting and midnight mass on January the 7th. American Christmas morning, we would open the present, just two presents each for each family member of our small family, mom, dad, sister, grandma, me. My family remembers me opening everyone's presents and just wanting me to show them what I got them for Christmas. But the Serbian Christmas was much more different. It was fasting. It was hard. We couldn't eat anything, no meat, no dairy, which is everything that is delicious. And then that all ends at midnight mass on Christmas Eve. Banja Vici, is that how you pronounce it, Violetta? Banja involves lighting candles and circling the church three times outside, looking like we belong to some sort of creepy cult. And then after communion, you get some leaves from the blessed oak tree, which you take home to burn, kind of like a Yule log, and straw that stands for Jesus's modest birth. My sister and I always felt really weird and like our celebration was so crazy compared to everyone else. But as I got older, I came to appreciate the things that make me different. Christmas has never been about presents to us. It's about family. It's about being together. And that's just a few of them. I thought the one that was the nicest surprise was Ro Khan's. I'll read you what he wrote in just a minute. This is WGN. Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. I don't think I asked Sam Panionovich for his Christmas tradition when I sent out that group email. Did I, Sam? Did you get the email?
I did not.
I'm sorry about that. I knew I'd have time to only read a few, and I wanted to get in Cochran and Ro Khan, and so I was kind of editing. It's not that I don't love you. I just... Giddy up, giddy up. Do you have a family tradition at the holidays you want to share with the whole class?
Nope.
Is that nope because you're ticked or nope because you don't have one?
I'll get back to you on that.
Come on, horse. I mean, if you really wanted to know.
Say that again, Griff?
If you really wanted to know, wouldn't you have included him on the email?
It's not like that.
It's almost like you don't really care.
I do care.
Okay. The song of a wintry fairyland.
Our cheeks are nice and... Hey, Sam, do you have a family tradition that you'd like to share with us at Christmas? What does the Panionovich family do?
We have dinner every Christmas Day. It's also Serbian Christmas in our household, too. So we do the 25th, and we also do January 7th.
Oh, you're like Violetta that way, huh?
In some way, yeah.
Well, I mean, two Christmases, one on the 25th, one on the 7th.
Correct.
Which is the truer Christmas for you?
25th.
Yeah, presents, Santa Claus, all that.
Right.
Is it just a church service on the 7th for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we go sometimes. I haven't been in a couple of years. Although my father always says the expensive gifts always come on Serbian Christmas because they're cheaper.
Oh, he can buy them on the 26th, in other words?
27th, 8th, 9th, whatever.
The religious element that I remember best about Christmas for my family, and it was, you know, basically, I mean, we were Catholic, but it was a secular Christmas. It was Santa Claus and presents, and we didn't do anything certainly after. But we would go to midnight mass. When we got old enough, we used to go to midnight mass. When midnight mass was at midnight, none of this Saturday at 5 p.m. mailing it in for your convenience stuff. No, we went at midnight. There were six of us in a Chevy Impala with not a half a dozen seatbelts, going to St. Jude and Joliet on midnight. So, you know, that's real exciting until about 10:30 when everybody's wanting to go to sleep. And we're sitting there with our Sunday clothes on, just kind of sitting around. This is before cable. This is before the interwebs. And so you really don't have much to do. And then you finally pile into the car, half asleep, and then you go to midnight mass. And it was really warm, and it was red, and it was rich, and it was glorious, and it was just such a celebration there, and that was pretty cool. And then you stumble out at midnight, because we're Catholics, and or 1 a.m., 1 in the morning, and not 1:05, because we get antsy. But so you stumble out of there after an hour of that, and you're kind of excited, but you're also kind of tired. I remember my brother got into the car, closed the door, said, "Let's go." Looked at the family in the car with him. It wasn't us. It was somebody else. They said, "You don't live with us. We can't take you here." So then he got out of the car and he got in our car. And then you go home and then you try and get to sleep. You're listening for reindeer hooves up on the roof. But midnight mass, the whole pageantry of it all was a lot of fun for me. Kim Gordon said, "For me, Christmas isn't about the presents. It's usually a work day followed by a movie and Chinese food. It's only about gifts when Hanukkah and Christmas collide. Some like to call that Chrismukkah. It's the only day when there's literally nothing to do and nowhere to go. I'm not a Grinch. I actually love the holiday, and I look forward to watching Holiday Inn or A Wonderful Life on Christmas Eve." Anna de Volantis has a famous story about her partner giving her, how did she describe it? Cochrane Show fans will know, the WGN co-host who has famously gifted a pair of wiper blades by her significant other on a holiday. That's always a bad Don't do that. And finally, Rokan wrote, "I grew up in an apartment building. There was no fireplace or chimney or even a plausible place for Santa to land his sleigh. Even at the curious age of 5, I was starting to lose faith. I protested to my parents that Santa was going to miss us, and they explained that he would hitch his sleigh and reindeer to the grappling hooks used by the window washers, who would annually dangle from the side of our 22-story building. When I awoke to find the cookies and milk gone and the window next to the tree slightly cracked, I was once again a true believer. It's 10:30. There was one Christmas, thank you, Rokan, for that, and thank you to the staff who prepared those for us for our holiday spectacular yesterday. We didn't get a chance to read them all. If you listen to our podcasts at WGNradio.com, you'll be able to hear our Christmas show, which was broadcast yesterday from 10 to noon with Domati and Bill Leff. It's coming up on 10:31. I'll pause here. We'll do the news. There's always a controversy at Christmas time. Christmas would never be Christmas without some sort of controversy. I just want to touch on one of them and play back what I also thought was the strangest piece of audio this week after the news. Who is this, Griff? I know this song. Who is this? I don't remember now.
Well, it's,
is that Debbie Gibson?
It's Last Christmas, the Wham original classic, but it's performed by Carly Rae Jepsen.
Ah!
Everybody's favorite.
I like that about Christmas songs. You can't really predict, like, is a George Michael or a Paul McCartney or David Bowie, Bing Crosby Christmas song going to be a good idea? And they can be. And then some people who you know and love don't exactly hit it. I don't think Frank Sinatra is a good Christmas song singer at all. I think Nat King Cole and Johnny Mathis are, and I will fight you to the death over that. It's kind of important to me. Barbara Streisand's always disappointed. James Taylor has a great Christmas CD. Carly Simon does not. It's just kind of hard to know who's going to find that groove and make it work. And there's Carly Rae knocking one out of the ballpark.
She knocks everything out of the park. She's the best. So for real. Well, it's like Britney Spears has a Christmas song that you'd imagine would have taken off, like "All I Want for Christmas Is You,"
yeah,
the Mariah Carey, but it just never did. It's very similar. It clearly wanted to be the same thing, but just didn't. I don't think people really remember that one so well.
And I heard one the other day that was Debbie Gibson, and it was awesome. It was on one of these, you know, Martha Stewart compilation CDs, or I don't know, Spotify. I forget where I was listening to it. I'm awash in Christmas music these days, but it was a really nice song. I got into a bit of a disagreement with Violetta the other day when she was doing traffic, and she chimed in about Christmas carols, and I said, "Well, what's your favorite song? And by whom?" And she said, "Well, why does it matter by whom?" And I said, that is the most important part of a Christmas song. They're all great songs, but it's the singer. It's Harry Connick does it, and it's better than if somebody else does it. It just matters.
The version.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sometimes they kind of shade it a little bit.
So you do have ones that you prefer maybe to others, you know, just generally.
Generally speaking, yeah. But yeah. But I do think it is about the performance, sure, of said song, Your Honor. Your witness. So just a couple quick movie notes here before we go on to another thing I wanted to get to about Christmas music. Netflix, in one headline this week, roasted 53 fans of A Christmas Prince.
I saw this.
So the creepy thing about this is, if you subscribe to Netflix, you watch your movies, and Netflix put out a tweet over the weekend that said this week, to the 53 people who have now watched A Christmas Prince every day for the last 18 days, who hurt you? And I think that's them being kind of funny, like, oh, you poor thing, you're, you know, all alone at home and you got nothing to do and you're watching this Christmas movie over and over again, which some people think is one of the worst Christmas movies ever, Christmas Prince. I'm sure I've seen it. We have a lot of these on in my house.
I mean, it's just like a Hallmark movie. It's
right.
There's no reason to judge it so harshly, I don't think.
It's not a major cinematic release.
Don't put it up against,
Star Wars.
Sure, yeah.
Right. It's just, it is what it is.
Yes.
Those things are not all that aspirational.
I watched it. I had a great time.
You did not.
I watched it with friends. Absolutely.
Oh, no. And 1 to 100, how was it?
Again, it transcends these these worldly rankings, but I guess I would give it like a 30.
Okay, fine. Well, that's a Christmas Prince. So then they send that out. But then people started responding defensively, where I think Netflix was just being a little cheeky. They said, why are you calling these people out? Hey, Netflix, back off. And then Netflix sort of dove in and said, okay, sweetie, we're fine. And it was just kind of weird. But one of the takeaways was that Netflix knows what you're watching, when you're watching it, and how many times you watch it.
They see you when you're sleeping.
They really do.
And when you're awake.
No, just what you're watching on. Well, actually, that's weird, Sam. I mean, that little box or that little laptop that you're looking at, who knows who's either recording it or how that's being monitored.
That's how I feel. You know, I'm okay with Netflix because, I mean, you can't watch anything bad on Netflix. I am more terrified by Alexa.
Oh, yeah,
that
really?
That thing scares the hell out of me.
She's listening at all times.
We've talked about this before, Griff.
Well, we talked about this on the Business Lunch last week, actually.
How so?
Amazon.
She's listening to everything.
Yeah, I mean,
She has to.
Yeah, in order to, you know, respond to your commands, it's always listening. Now, they say that they only, but it's just, there's something a little creepy about it.
So if you were saying something political or sexual or racist or just nobody else's business.
Anything, it doesn't matter.
Anything
it doesn't matter.
You're
anything.
Saying.
Yeah.
Because it has to register the name, so it's always listening to anything voice-wise.
I get it, and I think we should be aware of that. But, hey, Sam, what's the problem over there, Sam? What's going on?
I have major plans that I can't disclose, clearly.
Evidently.
It's probably a bad idea to talk about him on WGN Radio. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, he's trying not to. The other movie news this week is that Star Wars had the second best Thursday ever. The only better Thursday, they made $45 million Thursday night, was its own prequel. So Star Wars owns Thursdays, $45 million in for the movie that cost I don't know what it cost. It probably cost a zillion dollars to make. But they're going to get it all back, don't you believe? My nephew waited in line 4 hours to see it and said it was worth every minute of the wait. The movie was fantastic.
I contributed on Thursday. I went.
And?
Oh, really?
I liked it. I wouldn't say it was one of the best ones, but I think if I had to a vibe score it, I'd probably give it a 77.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, sorry.
You'll be asked.
Everybody. I'm so flustered from not being asked about my favorite Christmas film.
I know. It's a good thing I don't have Alexa because that's what I was talking. I was going over my list, and I said, Alexa, make sure Sam's not on the Christmas list. So props to Star Wars, and those of you who love that movie, I hear it's a little funnier, and some people think it's better. It's a good movie.
And just one more thing about that Netflix thing, where they're roasting people for watching A Christmas Prince 18 days in a row. Was that the number?
Yep.
I hated it so much for the sort of big brothery thing that you're talking about, but also it's like these are people that likely have an unhealthy dependence on your entertainment delivery system, which is practically like narcotic. It can be. You know, the way that these things like channel into our brains, there's a way to abuse it or be like unhealthy about it. I found that so gross that they were making fun of them.
Wait a minute, but at its core, you are actually somewhat troubled by somebody who would be watching it 18 days in a row?
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm taking it too seriously. But I just thought, this seems like a
I think it deserves
joke.
Attention. I really do, Griffin. But I also don't know, like, of those 50-some-odd people that watched it 18 days in a row, how many of them just had it on for the dogs? You know, but if you're some sad sack who really needs that connection with the world, and you're sitting there with a flannel hat on, and it's all you've got, I feel bad for you. I do wish you more life.
Just something creepy about the way that tweet was devised. It's like, shall I reveal the names? Ooh, I have the number.
That's right.
Would you like a name? Oh, We will all laugh. Yes, 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 yes.
Wow, Griff.
I hated that.
I hadn't gone there.
That's immediately what I thought.
Wow. Well, then let's just... I know you're not interested in this topic either, but I kind of am. This was written by Mary Nohorniak. Mary Nohorniak in the USA Today. Its headline, "Let Baby It's Cold Outside Fade Away" in 2017. She wrote, "In the wake of sexual harassment claims, is 2017 the year we retire Baby It's Cold Outside?" I'm going to play a couple seconds of the song, and I just want to ask you this question. After the break, come back with your answer. My number is 312-981-7200. Does this song still sound flirty and fun to you, or does it sound creepy and it should be put away? It's Baby, It's Cold Outside. She wrote, "In 2017, America woke up to the systemic sexual predation that pervades every corner of society. But some of our Christmas carols are stuck in the past. In particular, the drum beat against Baby, It's Cold Outside is getting too loud to ignore. For so many people, the classic winter call and response song invokes shivers. It's written in the 1940s by the Guys and Dolls composer Frank Lesser. The woman sings that she has to leave her beau's house. He suggests otherwise. She spells out reasons to go, and he asks otherwise. The weather is frightful. There's no cabs. They could share another drink or smoke. But the man, smoothly persuading her to stick around, feels a little too close to coercion for comfort. He simply does not take no for an answer.
I really can't stay. Mama, it's cold outside. I've got to go away. I said it's cold outside. I wish I knew how. Tickle the death that you dropped in. To break this spell. To break this spell. You better break that spell or go to my mother will start to worry. Mama, what's your hurry? Father will be pacing the floor."
That's part of the song. So how does that strike you today? You know, I don't mean to make a mountain out of a molehill, but that's kind of what we do sometimes, especially with Christmas traditions. You know, every year we argue about, I mean, Donald Trump wants everybody to say Merry Christmas as though we'd been denied that in the past. And there's always the dilemma about the courthouse having religious figures on it. So I just wonder, when you hear that song this year, is that still flirty and fun? It's a classic. Get a, you know, relax. Or, yeah, that's creepy, and that song needs to go away. How does that hit your ear? Mincing Rascals is a podcast we record at WGN Radio. It's pretty good, with Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie and Scott Standis, all from the Chicago Tribune. Our own Steve Bertrand. I host the thing, and they're really good. You'll be able to hear that right now if you just download the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's about news and politics in Chicago and Illinois and in these United States. We always broadcast part of the podcast after 11 o'clock. We'll get to that in a little bit. The gang has a lot to talk about this week. I'm asking you a little bit. Hey, Griff, you got part two? I'm asking you a little bit, not yet, we will in a minute, about this song, Baby, It's Cold Outside. And just one other note about this. In that USA Today piece where they note that the song is so dated and so, what was the word she used? Predation, I believe, sexual predation. She said, it's time to retire the song. But they also do put it in this context. She says, another interpretation of Baby, It's Cold Outside, where he won't take no, is that the woman would like to stay, but she's held back by the societal norms of the 1940s. In which an unmarried woman staying over at a man's house would be scandalous. Her reason for leaving all relates to other people. What will the neighbors think? Her mother will worry. It doesn't show a personal hesitation. It's not so coercive as it simply is. This is what women had to deal with back then. They couldn't stay even if they wanted to.
What's in this drink?
There ain't no fun to be had out there, you know.
This evening has been...
ain't even started yet.
So nice and fine.
Take another drink of wine.
You know, when I hear this
maybe
song,
you
I just, to me, it's a little creepy, but maybe that's just because, shoot, the guy that does the TV bake-off show had to leave. Everybody has to leave these days. It's pretty remarkable what's happening out there. So that's the filter I've been processing that song with. Nancy wanted to jump in and say, hi, Nancy, you're on WGN.
Hey, Jen, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
You know, I was just telling, I don't know if that was Griff I was speaking with, but I'm 87 years old, and back in my late teens, that was a very popular song, and it was a gal that sang it. I can't remember who it was, but it was gal. But I found it very romantic, and I didn't, maybe I was just too naive at that age, you know, 17, and the rendition of A Satchmo, sure, that sounds very suggestive to me. But, you know, the original, and I wish I could remember who it was.
Really? So Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald weren't the original then?
No. Yeah.
No, sir.
No. It was she was popular in
Okay, but here's the question for you. What an interesting perspective you have, Nancy. At 87, listening to it in 2017, do you still like the song? It's still romantic to you?
I love that song, but I don't care for that
version of it. Yeah. Well, that is as, you know, a scandalous a version maybe as I could find to play. But I like your perspective, Nancy. Thanks for the call. I'm going to run from you to Tom, and then we got to move on to the news. Hey, Tom, jump in there. You're on WGN. How are you?
Well, the quick answer is good grief, with apologies to
Charlie Brown. Yeah.
But predation? I mean, it's a playful song, and I guess you could your filter and my filter are probably similar because we're right at that World War II, post-World War II stuff. The person that just called was in her teens, if I did the math right, just after World War II.
Yeah.
And that was a whole other different time, and my mother came through that period too, and there were out-of-wedlock babies that were not talked about that were done out of love and not out of some craziness. So you do have all of that stuff that was going on today. Then it just wasn't talked about. So I think we have this sort of combination. I think you could do a whole show on from one end to the other end, shall we say.
I appreciate your call. Some songs travel better than others. I've always liked that song. Maybe next year I'll start to like it again. Maybe next year I won't hear it the way I hear it this year. This has been a very strange year. Evidence of that coming up with the Mincing Rascals.
People make me so mad. That song. What's wrong with that song?
What's the matter with the song? Let a song be a song.
He's flirting with her.
I believe that's where Griffin was on this, too. Did I read you right on that, Griff?
I was like, oh, he's roofing her. No, he's not. He's talking about how strong the drink is.
I would not say that it's time to do away with this song. I mean, we're living in a moment, and I think it would be crazy to not hear it differently. But you don't have... And, you know, think about that and interrogate it a little bit. I think it's useful to think about it differently, but I don't...
Well, I did just say that I'd bring it back maybe next year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, really, that's an interesting point you make.
I don't know if I see the value in saying, let's retire the song. But
no, but I do think it's...
I'm interested. I'm willing to have that conversation. But,
right.
But that's not where I'm at, no.
No, but I do think the conversation is relevant. I mean, if you just listen to what's happening there...
Yeah, I agree.
That's interesting. And maybe you can dismiss it, but at least hear it out, because that's what we're talking about these days. I know I got to take a break. It's 10:58. The news is next. This is WGN. Started to queue up the music. It came up a little quicker than I wanted, and then I thought, hey... Sam Panionovich, Doma Ti Pongo, Smooth Jazz.
Can you turn this down? I'm so offended. I'm appalled. This song appalls me!
Point, Panionovich, score. Hey, by the way, I know that we don't do the Bulls on this radio station, but I'm an NBA fan and basketball fan generally, and how about those Bulls? 5 in a row.
NBA record. They're the only team in the history of the NBA, going back to 1946, that rattled off 5 wins in a row after losing 10 in a row.
Well, that's yucking my yum a little bit, but that's okay. I'm enjoying this, man. Let me have this, okay?
No, that's a good stat.
That is a good stat, isn't it? That's a good thing.
And they are 5-0 with Nico Mirotic.
I know, and I did not know his game that well. To me, it was always Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose, or somebody else in there. That dude can score. That dude can play. It's no coincidence that we won five in a row against some terrible teams, but also some pretty good teams.
Milwaukee's really good.
And, the Greek freak didn't seem to have as much going on last night, and we beat the Celtics for crying out. Five in a row. So Roy Moore loses to Doug Jones in Alabama's special election. It's time for our Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. We record this each week at WGN Radio Studios with Christy McQuarrie, who writes editorials for the Tribune, with columnist Eric Zorn, with editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis, our own Steve Bertrand. I'm your MC and host. And so we were talking about the Alabama special election and the Mincing Rascals, and it was really a glasses half full or half empty kind of episode. Since the margin was so close, I called it a virtual tie. Steve Bertrand did not agree. What was it like in your
house? Virtual tie? What do you mean virtual tie?
It was a virtual tie. I mean, it was 1.5%.
Oh, which is exactly.
Would not have gotten any closer.
By the way, it's exactly what I predicted.
Yeah, notice that. You had not only the winner, but the percent right before the polls closed.
Look, yes, sir.
It is very difficult for us to change our habits, whether we vote Democrat or whether we vote Republican. That's what we do, and we tend to find stories that support the way we vote. What did Donald Trump carry to Alabama by 28 points, I think, last year? So for the Democrat to turn around from a 28% deficit to a 1.5% increase in Alabama, I think it's more than, I think it was way more than a tie. I mean, I think the odds were way against
him. I don't think any Republicans
him.
Changed their votes.
I don't think that's true. I think in suburban areas of Alabama, this is my reading of the results, was that a lot of them either stayed home or did vote for Jones.
It just wasn't a turnout thing that turned this.
That's how I was reading it. Well, no Republicans who would have otherwise voted for Moore said, you know what, I'm going to vote for Jones. Rather, they just didn't vote, that the Democrats got out more votes.
Well, the get out the vote push was remarkable. If you look at the numbers in the traditionally black section, the black belt, and that's what put him over the top. Some Republicans did not vote for Roy Moore. They did one of two things. They either did a write-in, which they wrote for Nick Saban, who's the head coach of the University of Alabama.
Is that what they did? Is that what the write-in was?
No, write-in vote was mostly
might
that.
Might as well.
Or they held their nose and voted for Doug Jones. I know both these guys. I've covered Roy Moore when I worked at the Birmingham News for 14 years.
You're not a fan?
No, he's a monster. I know Doug Jones was actually the head of my Leadership Birmingham class in 2004, so I've smoked cigars with him, had cocktails with him.
What do you think of him?
Smart, good guy, got the last two convictions in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. I mean, this is a guy who is competent and smart, but he's also he'd be liberal if he came here to Chicago. It's a strange mix right now. I'm not convinced he'll win re-election in 2020. Yeah. The Republicans are the ones signing the side because they don't have to deal with him. He would have raised tens of millions of dollars for the Democratic Party had he won. He would have, because he's a maniac. He's not too bright. He's mean, and he's kind of cray-cray.
Where were you on this one, Kristen? Did you have a horse in this race? Did you have
a prediction? She rode that horse to the studio today.
I really don't. I mean, all of the speculation, and I thought the first initial Washington Post story about the accusers was very credible, and then I just sort of tuned out. I'm not familiar with the yearbook stuff and all this. I just didn't follow the play-by-play. I was surprised when I was watching at night that it was as close as it was, because I thought that this would be more of a when the other fellow senator,
Richard Shelby.
Yes, when he was compelling to me, saying, we can do better. And so to me, I thought that was more of the theme, that we can do better. And yet, it doesn't surprise me terribly that Roy Moore hung in there, because there is a huge conservative base of voters who will hold their nose and vote for someone they don't like because they are extremely concerned about the makeup of the Supreme Court. They are worried about the makeup of the Senate. There also is a healthy skepticism about accusers coming forward at the last minute. And I think both of those factors played into the fact that he did hang in there until the very end.
Well, I don't think you can discount the importance of the abortion issue in this. Every conversation I heard about it that went in depth indicated that a lot of people were, as Kristen puts it, holding their noses and voting for Moore because they felt that he was on their side of the abortion issue, which and there are a lot of people, and that is the main issue for them in politics. And Doug Jones is strongly pro-abortion rights.
He's very liberal on just about every key area, where I could see it would be difficult for Republicans to actually cast a vote for him.
But I don't know what it was like at your house, if you were paying any attention to it. We were deliberately not paying attention, but paying attention. You know, it's like, I'm not going to look.
You didn't have one of those parties like you had for Hillary Clinton?
Right.
I sent him a text.
The blue martini. You didn't have blue martinis this time?
I actually texted him. I asked him if he had blue drinks.
John is rubbing his forehead right now. It's terrible.
Yeah, I know. And I'm going to let you enjoy this. Because Bertrand literally said, do you have blue cocktails out tonight? And I'm like, no. I had that same sick, I feel bad for America, what's happened to my country feeling all night long.
Yeah.
And then like a horse race, we're out of the far turn, the underdog nips the favorite at the wire. That's what happened.
At the gate, Doug Jones takes an early lead, up 3%. It's Doug Jones, and now it's Roy Moore. Moore leads by 5%, going into the backstretch at the halfway point.
Brenda was in bed. I walked into the room and said, Moore lost. And by the way, that was the first headlines I saw. Moore lost.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Jones won. Right. Moore lost. And literally, people were texting and tweeting tears. They were crying.
Oh, yeah. No.
I mean, I can't help it. Let's tone down the hysterics about this.
This was a great night for America.
It is an overstatement.
It is?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is? Why? Yeah. Why
you
is
think
that?
So?
Well, I mean, he did win. I mean, you know, it's one race. The guy was a clown. I mean, the guy running was a clown. Take the sexual perversity away from it. The guy just has a recordness of clown.
Well, unless a violent clown, because this is a guy who's quoted as saying.
But he has Jewish friends. One of our attorneys is a Jew.
Right. But this is also a guy, Roy Moore, was quoted in his first term as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court saying, it is the righteous, we can use the righteous sword to get rid of homosexuals.
There was a potential for loss here. There wasn't a great potential for gain, I don't think. And then it was like the racehorse coming in at the wire. It happened so fast.
Jones is making a move. Is it too late for Doug Jones? Moore's lead is 3%, and with just a handful of precincts left to report, Jones takes the lead. They're at the wire, and he wins it! Doug Jones wins by 7/10. Make that 1.5%. Jones wins with 671,151 votes. With 650,436 votes, it's Roy Moore and the horse he rode in on.
By the way, the president has said that Kristen Gillibrand, the New York Democrat senator, would, quote, come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago, parentheses, and would do anything for them, and is now fighting against Trump. Sarah Sanders said that was not sexist, and if you had or heard any innuendo there, then you've got your mind in the gutter. How did you all hear that? When you first read that or heard that text, that tweet by the president, did you think it was a slur, or was that just...
I think you could read it that way, but I think if you put it all in context, that it was sexual, that there was some...
I read it that way.
I
read it and went, that's incredible.
I did, and then I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, and you know what I'm thinking? Well, because he has said, you know, all politicians will come and ask him for anything.
He said that about other male politicians.
But just in the horror of everything, and in parentheses, that's the other thing. Like, that's a wink, wink, nod, nod, and she'd do anything.
Why do we even try to get in his head? She could have been
off. She's the president.
She was a member of Congress from New York. He was a wealthy New York financier who loved to play politics. She could have promised that she was going to vote a certain way or introduce an amendment to something. I'm not suggesting that your theory isn't right, but I didn't immediately go there. What I find irritating is that none of the mainstream media who covered this, everyone got hung up on the, is he being sexual? Did she go groveling for campaign contributions?
Trump and his daughter gave $7,000 over the past few years.
Okay, well, this is the question that never gets asked. When there's a campaign contribution that is questionable, the media says, you need to give this back, and then the person gives back the check, and then the story moves on. The issue is, what was the relationship in the first place that brought you two together that you're asking for campaign contributions? Were you at lunch? Were you at Mar-a-Lago? Everyone just sweeps over that.
What's the problem if she asked for campaign contributions?
If you are asking for campaign contributions from Donald Trump, and then you are turning around and refuting his tweet, but in fact, what he said was correct, she was in there groveling, I think you're. I think that's. Well, Kristen, you're not being truthful.
Kristen, none of that matters. It was about the parentheses.
It was what was in parentheses.
But that's to you. It doesn't matter. It matters to me when campaign contributions exchange hands. What that relationship was in the first place, and I think just in general, the media doesn't dig enough on those issues.
I totally agree with Kristen about campaign contributions. I think the whole thing is sleazy and dubious and questionable. What I understand about this is that it was a one-time meeting in 2010, back when Trump was giving a lot of money to Democrats, and that Ivanka was in the room with Donald, so that the implication that she was offering some sort of sexual favor, which I definitely read, is very ugly. I think without the remarks in the parentheses, it just would have been another stupid, you know, she's an ingrate.
She said he should resign. Well, of course she's going to say that. Who cares? That's not a news story. The only reason we're talking about this is because of the sexual innuendo in this thing.
Well, and she's now a rising star in the Democratic Party, and good for her. She's been really on top of sexual assault in the military and all these different issues. She also, when she first ran, was considered a Sarah Palin-esque candidate. She has a 100% voting record from the NRA. She was anti-immigration. She was anti-gay marriage. And now she has evolved to a point where even the New York Times has called her rootless.
You've got my jaw dropping here, Kristen. None of that matters anything. None of that, that doesn't count a whit. What we're talking about here is the President of the United States implying that she got offered or had sex with him in order to get money. What she stands for or how she's changed her position, and we can argue that and fight that, fine. She would have to defend that. That's not what this conversation is. This
I
is
agree
the president
with you. I'm going
that.
Off on a little bit of a tangent on her kind of becoming this rising star with the Democratic Party and a deeper exploration of where she stands on issues. So I went off on a little tangent. I agree
with
you.
Come back.
Okay.
will the Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios win a re-election, and should he? The county assessor, according to two huge studies by the Tribune and ProPublica, consistently undervalues expensive homes and businesses in Cook County and consistently overtaxes less expensive property. This is a little wonky and people hate math, but it looks like he's either incompetent or corrupt. Eric,
can't he be both?
He could be neither.
Aim high. It's Cook County.
What should happen to Joe Berrios?
Well, I think he should be defeated at the primary.
He's being challenged.
I think there's a creditable challenge. Fritz Kagi, is that how you say his last name?
There's two. Andrea Rayla, who's a property tax attorney, and Fritz Kagi.
And I don't know if those two are how those two match up. The thing that actually really offends me about a lot of this is that they refuse to show their work product. I mean, you want to know what do they look at when they assess your business, your home? What are the factors? How do they weigh them? And Berrios has gone to court to fight rulings that say that he's got to turn over this stuff.
I don't understand that. What does he have to gain by not being more transparent?
I really don't know, and I've asked his spokesman this, and I've written a column about it before. Just like it's outrageous. This ought to be something that we know so that we can figure out whether he's doing his job properly.
Because there isn't a process. I don't think they have anything to turn over. I think that's what the series has shown, is that they're not using market sales studies, which is basically when you sold your place in Minnesota, mm-hmm. that's the market value of your home, whatever the market paid for it, right? And in Cook County, they don't take that number and immediately apply it to your home. So it's still kind of this big guessing game of uniformity and where you live. And they sort of count on people appealing their taxes in order to even out the numbers. Those are both wrong. He's not assessing property the way other assessors do it. And I think that's why he's not turning anything over, because especially with these big wigs, I think it all comes down to a negotiation. And that was brought up in the stories, too. The assessments are negotiated between attorneys, and that's crazy.
The stories are must reading, by the way. You've got to go on Tribune Online. Tribune and ProPublica together put this investigation together, and they find things like he'll value a certain property at an exact dollar amount, and then they'll appeal it. It'll get knocked back down, and then the next cycle they'll assess it at the exact same amount.
Right. For 9 straight years, a property will have to the penny the same valuation.
And that suggests, as Kristen says, that there is no actual process. And
that if you have an attorney, you can maybe get it lowered. But if you don't.
And let's not forget who those attorneys are. It's Ed Burke, who is head of the Finance Committee in the City Council. It is Mike Madigan, the Speaker for Life of Illinois. I mean, you have very powerful people.
And Joe Berrios is the Cook County Democratic Party Chairman.
Right. And here's the problem, and it's a serious problem. If Berrios is defeated at any stage of this election process, the unemployment rate for the Berrios family goes up to 90%.
Well, that's why I asked, is this incompetence or is this corruption? You're making me think it's stinky, and you guys were making me think, no, they just don't know what the hell they're doing. Maybe it's some combination thereof. I don't know, but
well, Scott votes for both.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's Steve Bertrand and Scott Santis at the end. I'm John Williams. Quick note about that. Jason Grotto is the author of that piece in ProPublica. And along with the Chicago Tribune, they wrote about how properties and homes are valued in Cook County. It's not as difficult to read as you might guess. It's fascinating. It's important. If you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper or listen to the Mincing Rascals, the full podcast, wherever you subscribe to find our podcast. It's 1124.
Well, baby, I'm dancing in the dark with you between my arms, barefoot on the grass, while listening to our favorite song. When I saw you in that dress, looking so beautiful, I don't deserve this. Darling, you look perfect tonight.
This is our Vibe Score segment. We always start with Griffin introducing us to a song that maybe you and I should know a little bit about, listen to. On the Vibe Score segment, we take things Griff presents to us and rate them on a scale of 1 to 100. Play at home and with your friends. What were we listening to there, Griff?
Perfect by Ed Sheeran with Beyonce.
That wasn't a Christmas song, was it?
No. Is that okay?
I just was wondering if they were going to then say, I'm so happy New Year or something, but no, okay. Yeah, it was a nice song. Is that what you want us to rate?
Yeah. Yes, it absolutely is. It seems like you don't want to.
I was a little underwhelmed. That said, Sheeran, and you said Beyonce?
Beyonce. So, like, I mean, and people, I don't know. I often forget this about Ed Sheeran, but he's like the biggest star in the world.
Yeah, he really is.
It's hard to believe and understand, and I just forget about it, but it's true. His music is just so streamed, and so it's like he's always number one on year-end charts and stuff, and it kind of blows my mind.
And
so,
he looks nothing like he sounds.
That's also very true. He looks like an extra in The Shire. In the Lord of the Rings.
You know, I was thinking about that, though, because FanSided, we talked about this week, this website that Mark Harmon works for doing sports. FanSided rated the top 250 sports and entertainment entities and brands on the world. Mm. So, like, number one, the most loved brand or team or thing is Ohio State University. Deepest, richest fan culture. Mm. Number two, Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Number three, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Talk about what a weird list, right?
I love it.
Number four is Star Wars, then Conor McGregor. Anyway, Ed Sheeran is number 70 on the list, but he's ahead of Instagram, Steph Curry, and the Blackhawks. He is on the globe, a big deal.
But where's Beyonce?
Beyonce is
somewhere.
She must be on there. Not in the top 100.
Really?
He's ahead of her.
Yeah,
If you want singers, Taylor Swift is in the top 15. Hmm. Justin Bieber is in the top 100.
This is an interesting. I wonder what their metrics are. I'm curious.
I asked him about that. It's not complete mathematic. It's not like they have this algorithm and they just plug it in.
Well, I mean, that's a complicated question to answer, so I'm sure it's subjective in some way, but that's interesting.
It's both, yeah. So yeah. Anyway, back to Ed Sheeran.
So he's teamed with Beyonce, another huge, huge star. And I don't know. What's your score for
all right,
this?
That song was, for me, 79, final answer. Where are you on that one, Beyonce? Domati?
This is a big surprise.
Does that happen a lot?
Happens all the time.
Let me confirm. We don't have Beyonce on the show today? Okay. I thought we did. I thought we had her.
You're drinking lemonade, though.
I am drinking lemonade right now. I give it a 90. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid right now. I love it. Okay. I love
Panny
it.
Panayanovich, go.
83.
Griff.
65. I think it's fine.
Okay, fine. Griffin and I are in the same place.
Ed Sheeran has been left out of what has been a broader sort of trend in music criticism called poptimism, where like it's okay to like pop now.
Yeah.
And if you're like a smart into music kind of person, you know, But Ed Sheeran's totally left out of that. Everyone still kind of hates
him.
Which I think is unfair. I don't know why.
What's the pushback?
I have no idea. I really couldn't tell you.
Do people kind of just hate pop stars? Like, people hate Bieber. They just hate
pop
stars.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I think that ended, though, because, like, a lot of people in, I don't know, like,
Britney's
music critics.
Rebounded and stuff
people,
like that.
It's okay to say you like Britney, and, like, Justin Bieber's last album had a lot of good songs. Ed Sheeran just got left out, and I feel kind of bad for him, but at the same time, I don't love...
Maybe it's that last song of his, the Your Body song. Maybe people just thought, shut up.
The Shape of You? Nah, yeah. I don't... it's just a boring song, that's all. Anyway,
okay, let's get to something else.
Yeah, what are we doing now? Oh, Star Wars. So, Sam, you said you saw it.
Yes.
And what did you give it again?
74.
So that's a little low for someone who saw it on opening night.
I went in there with three questions I needed answered.
Yeah.
No, seriously. And I won't say what they are, but I had three questions and none of them were answered.
Wow. That's...
Are you not going to say... I guess you don't want to say what those questions are.
Because then you're
spoiling. You don't want to spoil anything.
That's
okay.
Nice of you.
Okay. Yeah. But it's you know, it's a movie. It's not a questionnaire.
Everyone dies. They all die.
I have a hard time believing that. This is the new one. It's... The Last Jedi, directed by Rian Johnson. He made Looper and Brick and a number of other really good movies.
I'm giving it an 82, Griffin. 82 is my vibe score.
You have not seen it yet.
I've not seen it yet. I've seen the trailer, and I've heard that it's kind of funnier. And here's the thing. Here's where I am on Star Wars. I feel like it is absent from my resume, and it's time I got serious about it and started to plow through the whole Star Wars anthology.
Have you ever... What do you mean? You haven't seen them?
I saw the first movie.
Are you
the
for real?
Very I didn't first know this movie.
The first one or the fourth one?
Right.
Episode 4.
1977?
Yes. I started in 77, saw the next one that came out. Was that The Empire Strikes Back?
Yes.
And then I'm done.
Okay.
And it just started to feel like work to me. But now I feel like maybe...
when you mow the lawn, do you get like 2/3 of the way and stop?
Well, I didn't know they were going to keep adding lawns to the
thing.
Well,
you should have finished the first trilogy.
Sam.
Yeah,
but Sam, I mean, think about that analogy. That is work that you're saying. Like, why does he want... If he doesn't have to...
Yeah, but I do feel like if I had known then that it was going to be the thing it is, I thought it was going to be a three-off, and it's fine. I wasn't paying attention in
79. But you didn't see Return of the Jedi?
I don't know that I did.
I'm not convinced you've seen any of them, to be honest.
Okay, I was in a movie theater once, and Jar Jar Binks was on the screen. What was I looking at then?
That was 2001, or 1999. That was The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, that was the prequels.
Dip my toe in that one, step back out of the pool, but I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to come back.
You know... popular doctrine is that you can skip the prequels, but you should have a working knowledge of the originals, and then these new ones happen to be pretty fun too. I'm not a big Star Wars fan, so I don't know why I'm preaching to you.
You haven't seen this one?
Not yet, but I'm gonna go.
All right, so the one person who has seen it is giving it a 74.
What's striking me about this one, it seems like critics like it a lot better than like diehard fans, so it seems to have gone a new direction in who it's pleasing, which is interesting.
That is why I have friends like that, Griffin. I think that's why I've been reticent to get on the bus, because they're so picky, and you can't make fun of their movies. And if they don't get their questions answered, then it's a bad movie. And I'm like, it's a movie. Come on, the spaceships and...
You're allowed to dislike choices that are made, though. I don't see what's wrong with that. But, I mean, I understand
what
you're saying.
It's hard to join the club late, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's fine.
By the way, I hadn't been to a theater, I think, in 2 years. They had a full-on bar and an ice cream parlor in the movie theater. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
That's standard issue now. Where'd you see it?
In Orland.
They're in color now, too, Sam. These movies, they're really something. You gotta see them.
Ice cream parlor.
One more, Griff.
This is something I just saw. Here's the question. Can you copyright a sandwich? This would be in food and drink category. There's a brewery in Grand Forks, North Dakota, was selling a sandwich called the Silo. Now, it's vertical. It's sort of shaped like a beer koozie, but the koozie is like bread.
Got
and
it.
And then the filling on the
oh,
inside.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
It's an homage to another sandwich called the Clubfoot. From a restaurant called the Staggering Ox that's located in Montana.
I'm not eating a Clubfoot, but keep going.
But you're eating a Silo.
Yeah, I am. I am.
Well, that was their problem with it. The Staggering Ox then like filed a complaint and said, that's our copyrighted sandwich. You can't sell a sandwich like that. They have a copyright on this style of sandwich, they say. And they sent a cease and desist.
I'm with them on that. I'm with the owners of the Clubfoot. You can't go taking the same sandwich and calling it a silo. I'm with them on this.
I'm reading this long thing about it, and it seems that there's no actual precedent on this.
I thought they would mention the Chicago Mix popcorn. Remember?
Right.
There's a little candy shop in downtown Minneapolis that mixed caramel, white, and cheese corn, and they called it the Chicago Mix. Then Nuts on Clark and Garrett started doing the Chicago Mix, and they sued these giant popcorn entities in Chicago, and the little candy shop in Minnesota won, even though it's three popcorns, we can call it whatever we want. And they said, no, you can't. That mix is called the Chicago Mix, and if you say Chicago, you can't call it a Chicago Mix. So now they call it the Tri-Mix,
right. Well,
or something.
So that's a trademark, and it's all about the name. Which
Minnesota
is what,
Mix.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. Yeah,
the Staggering Ox says that they have a trademark, so you can't use our name, but they're not using the name. They're using the style of sandwich, which would be a copyright issue.
Right.
It's so, a little different.
Right. So there's if apples were apples, then you couldn't even serve the three kinds of popcorn.
I'm so upset about this. I'm going to travel to North Dakota and demand a silo.
What's on the sandwich, Griff?
Yeah,
I mean,
really.
It seems like, honestly, it doesn't look that good. It just seems like a normal sandwich. It's got like bacon, lettuce, tomato, like you could, whatever.
It's a BLT.
I think somebody else has got a complaint here.
Maybe some turkey, some cheese, who knows? I mean, who's to say what you're
bologna and a slice of Kraft.
But it just seems like a lot of ado about nothing, but it's just interesting that they're fighting over this style of sandwich. So I think we should all go.
So one more soundbite I want to get in before we get done. You got anything else you want to run by us, Griff?
No.
That's it. It's 11:49. This is WGN. Sam, what is your definition of the internet?
So I typed out a worldwide network where you can access information and communicate with others. Am I close?
I think you are.
Oh, nice.
That works for me.
Cool.
But the reason I ask is because this week everybody and last week was talking about Bitcoin. Amy did a segment about it. I did a segment about it. Ro did a segment about it. What is Bitcoin? Because it went through the roof after it went on the market. Actually, it went through the roof and now it's being traded on markets in Chicago. And we're all sitting there asking questions about something that you feel coming, that this virtual currency has been around for a little while. My neighbor told me that he has a portfolio of virtual currency. And I'm like, I know it's there. I know it's coming. It's maybe going to matter in my life, but I don't exactly understand it. And it reminded me of what happened on the Today Show in 1995, when they did a story about violence in America, and for the first time ever, they then had a graphic on the screen, and they said, to find out more, go to violence@nbc.ge.com. And Brian Gumbel and Katie Couric and the gang were sitting there looking at that, and they did not know what they were talking about.
Oh, that little mark with the A and then the ring around it?
At?
See, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Katie said she thought it was about.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I'd never heard it. I'd never heard it said. I'd always seen
around.
The mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC. Violence at NBC. GE.com. I mean,
well, Allison should know.
What is internet
that,
anyway?
Internet is that massive computer network. Mm-hmm. The one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean? That's big. How does one? What do you write to it like mail?
So Allison, can you explain what internet is?
That's how I feel when I'm talking about Ed Sheeran.
Allison, can you explain what Ed Sheeran is? Why does that... How? What is it?
I like how she didn't say the. She just said internet.
I love it. I mean, I've heard that a number of times. Every time it makes me laugh.
I know, it does. And
it's
I mean, great. You could take
it's
out
so pure.
Internet and put in Bitcoin, and that's us right now. And 10 years from now, they're going to go, oh, they didn't even know what Bitcoin was. It's mine. It's well, I don't know what it is. And yet they're going, yeah, well, I think I understand. It's a massive network of computers and colleges. Yeah. The same way I feign some knowledge about Bitcoin. I don't know. I've done three interviews about it at length on my show. I have no idea what it is. By the way, Sam's going to give you his five picks for the NFL this week. He does it every week. He's in a big thing in Vegas. Go.
Bears plus
five. How about that?
Over the Lions.
So Bears are winners.
I think they cover five. I think they lose by one.
Which in your world is winning. Okay.
24-23. I've got the Chargers tonight. I really like Philip Rivers. They're hot right now. I like the Chargers. That's a pick 'em. Just pick the winner. Philadelphia lost their quarterback, Carson Wentz, torn ACL. So I like the Giants getting 7.5. I also took the Seahawks at home, -1 against the Rams. And I have to go Patriots off a loss. I wanted to go Steelers, but when the Patriots lose, You pick the Patriots the following week. They are -2 at Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh and New England? Wow, what a game.
That should be a good one.
When is that one played?
That is tomorrow at 3:30 local time.
That's going to be on television and everything, huh?
I would hope so.
Okay. We'll check on Monday.
Go Bears!
And see how that goes. And go Wildcats and go Blackhawks tomorrow night here. Is the Blackhawks game on WGN Radio, or is that the one that we've moved?
Yes, that's on 5:30, and then the face-off is at 6 o'clock. Do you want an update on Butler,
no.
Purdue?
Okay, no.
You don't?
No.
Right.
There's a thing called Internet. You can go find it if you want. I'm taping the game. Okay.